Hey y'all, it's Lauren. As a Black woman, I've experienced anxiety when it comes to figuring out what to do with my hair before an interview or a workday. Growing up, I quickly realized that having your hair done meant it had to be straightened, permed, and styled to perfection. But why couldn't it be natural? What made us believe that natural means wrong? For years, Black women and men had to conform to European standards of what it means to look professional. Often, Black women and men miss out on opportunities and are discriminated against for wearing their natural hair. This is why the Crown Act, which stands for Creating a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair, was created in 2019 by Dove and the Crown Coalition in partnership with former State Senator Holly J. Mitchell of California. The act was created to ensure protection against discrimination based on race-based hairstyles by extending statutory protection to hair texture and protective styles such as braids, locks, twists, and knots in the workplace and public schools. To help get an understanding about what it means to embrace your crown, we took a trip to Frizz Fest, a natural beauty festival in St. Louis, to experience the power of celebrating and embracing the natural you.
It's a great time. We love coming every year. We've been since the first year. We love that it's family oriented. You know, you can bring your kids, have a good time, great shopping, great food. So it's a perfect Saturday.
The event featured vendors, food trucks, and small Black business owners from across the St. Louis region, like Valeria Rodriguez.
So this is Shining All Shades, an empowerment coloring book series that celebrates and uplifts women of color in all of our beautiful shades. Each illustration I hand-drew, designed, and self-published, and it's all about celebrating our diversity. So the illustrations are paired with affirmations and quotes to celebrate who we are through the act of self-care and art. I don't know, especially after COVID, it's just a breath of fresh air. The very first one was exciting, and I was like, oh my God, this is my first event, I can't wait. But Frizz Fest is always something to look forward to, so I'm just honored to be able to celebrate with the community again, especially after such a dramatic year with an intense year, you know, politically, socially, and of course, health-wise.
And Afia Brown.
The name of my business is Skybox. I named it after my daughter, who was 7. She's obsessed with accessories, so I sort of motioned it after her, and she loves bright colors, hence all the bright colors. So it's basically from her. We started about 3 years ago, so, and now we're actually out and about trying to make it blow up.
Frizz Fest was created by St. Louis native Leslie Frizzy Hughes under her nonprofit Frizzy by Nature LLC to encourage self-love and inspire confidence among women. This year's festival welcomed a notable guest speaker who was a leader in embracing natural beauty.
So I have a special announcement. This is very a proud moment for me. Today we have joining us at Frizz Fest, we have our mayor, Tashara Jones.
I said, how are y'all doing? Oh my God, it is so good to see all of your beautiful Black faces here today.
But there's no better way to close out Black Business Month than Frizz Fest. Can I get an amen? Right, right, because Black women are the fastest growing group of entrepreneurs. Yep. And small businesses are the backbone of our community, creating jobs, generating revenue, creating wealth, and innovating in new products. And I couldn't be more happier to be the first Black woman mayor here celebrating this with you. One of the first things I did when I became mayor was sign the Crown Act into law for the city of St. Louis. And then the second thing I did was let my frizz out, right? Because one thing about a Black woman, she will always change her hair. Can I get an amen? It may look like this one day, and it may be laid, fried, dyed, and laid to the side the next. But hey, you know, we make it work, right? So this event is also to encourage self-love in our community and to make sure that we recognize Black women businesses and uplift each other, because if we're not uplifting each other, then who else is going to look out for us? Who else is going to look out for us? So we have to look out for each other and support each other with our time, talent, and treasure. And self-confidence is like a muscle. And every once in a while, you need to flex it, right? Flex that self-confident muscle. Flex it. Flex it.
Mayor Jones's excitement about embracing self-confidence rang true throughout Tower Grove Park during Frizz Fest that day. The image of men and women embracing their natural hair in afros and little black girls with puffballs dancing to the sounds of R&B and soul reminded me of a family reunion.
Oh my goodness, it means so much because I didn't have this when I was growing up, and so the fact that they have this now that she's here, I'm so excited and for her to grow up and, you know, have it.
Are you having a good time?
Thank you.
It was one of the many 90 degree plus days here in St. Louis, but even in the heat, people were smiling, laughing, and loving on one another, which brought joy and comfort to my heart.
First of all, I'm so happy to be out in this space. I'm happy to be around positive energy, seeing all these beautiful women and men just celebrating, having a good time together. I'm excited. I'm glad to be here. I'm sending the sun to be here right now. It's a good time.
Frizz Fest brought out the best in everyone and allowed black women and men to just be themselves and bask in their blackness. I wanted to hear from other black women in our region about what it means to embrace your crown and what the Crown Act means to them. So in this episode, we hear from a beauty spa and salon owner about the importance of individuality. And an African-American history professor breaks down the history of black hair and how her personal experience is one that many black women can relate to. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here. After attending Frizz Fest in Tower Grove Park, we wanted to learn more about the work black women in our community are doing to uplift and embrace natural beauty. This is why we are introducing you to Tamika Steigers, the owner of Locks of Glory, a beauty spa and salon that we visited in July. She sat down with us in the nail area and discussed how she started her business after trying to get a job in the public health field.
I applied for several positions and thought that I was a shoo-in. Didn't get them, so I got pretty frustrated. And I had been just doing hair at home, and I decided I'm just going to make this a career. The business is picking up. A lot of people are wanting the service that I was providing, which is Sister Locks. So I went to the Grace Hill Women's Business Center, learned about, you know, just how to set up a business plan. And I got started, and I just was trying to be as professional as I could at home. And then once that ended, I wanted to move to the city, and so I needed to get a place like outside the home. And went through that journey, which is a whole long journey in and of itself, because I didn't have a cosmetology license. And so as long as I was at home, I was kind of just under the radar. But needing to get a storefront, I said I want to, you know, at least try and buy by the law. And so I entered into this agreement with a stylist to do an apprenticeship. But before we started, I was approached by a couple gentlemen from the Institute for Justice. They were going around the country to, bring lawsuits against states who weren't allowing hair braiders to basically work in their field without a cosmetology license. So that was right up my alley. So as long as I was in the court procedures, I was protected by the law. So I was able to do hair in the salon that I was renting at that time because we were in the lawsuit.
The Braiding Opportunity and Freedom Initiative by the Institute for Justice was launched in 2014 because in many states, braiders have to spend thousands of dollars on a cosmetology license that doesn't provide the techniques and skills for African-style hair braiding. And Tamika's work with the Institute for Justice helped change the law, which now allows braiders to receive a specialty license specifically for braiding, making Missouri one of 14 states that require a specialty license rather than a full cosmetology license.
And so I've been really promoting that, pushing that, and I've known quite a few women who are registered hair braiders so that they can be, you know, feel like you're a professional in your field, and they do great work, and they're, you know, out of their houses now. So I'm very proud of that work, and bought this building here about 4 years ago and expanded, not just doing hair, but to cater to the whole person. So our focus is really wellness, and we do that through our services for hair, skin, and nails. So we try and use chemical-free products or less caustic products, and really try and cater to the person's mental and physical appearance. And that's where we are today, and that's what we're pushing, just continuing trying to make sure our community as well.
Locks of Glory is located in the Del Mar Loop, an entertainment, culture, and restaurant hub in St. Louis.
That was the first name I came up with about 12 years ago. And Locks of Glory, to me, it just relates back to a woman's hair being her glory, and not just locks individually, but your hair. You know, when our hair isn't right, we don't feel right. If our hair don't look good, we don't feel like we look good. So we really just want to cater to the woman and make sure that, you know, you're feeling good.
Tamika and I laughed and smiled as we talked about memories of getting our hair done as kids.
So my first hairstyle I had as a small kid, like preschool age, I had a Jerry curl. Right, girl, I'm old. I had a Jerry curl in the kindergarten. And we just... It was juicy. I remember going to the salon and smelling the chemicals. I never experienced any like chemical burns or anything like that, but it was just the smell of chemicals. And that is definitely something I wanted to not have as I did my business. I remember getting my hair braided. The most like traumatizing experience I had as a kid with my hair. So, you know, after the Jerry curl came the era of the relaxer or permanent, right? And my mom tried to strip the curl and put a relaxer in, and my hair just broke off and fell off. And I had this little mess of a little ponytail here, and my neighbor told my mom, just cut that off. So in the third grade, I started third grade with the boy haircut like a box.
After going through a traumatic experience as a child, she remembers going to college in the early 2000s and beginning to embrace her natural hair.
And I tried to achieve these natural looks when my hair was still straight. So I would do the braid outs and have it wild. And then once I graduated, I just decided I'm done relaxing my hair. I cut it off and just went short, and I haven't looked back since. And I really, really love my natural hair. And I love educating people about their natural hair and just the versatility that comes with it.
Tamika values individuality and believes it is important to be able to work in an environment where you can be yourself.
It's extremely important for women of color to realize that we don't have to change who we are to fit in anybody's box. And so that as we talk about this Crown Act, to me, I feel like it's sad that we needed it. But it just tells us the oppressive state that we're in, that we need laws to protect us when it comes to our own hair. It's very, very, very sad to me. But then when you look at the other side, it gives women freedom, women and men freedom, to know that I don't have to change my hair in order to get a job. Well, they shouldn't, because I think it still exists. But overall, there's a law that says you're protected. You know, you can wear your hair how you want to wear your hair. I'm hopeful that people will just continue to be free in and of themselves and know that their hair does not define who they are. It speaks for how they feel for a moment, but not who they are on the inside. And I'm so glad that, I mean, hair is, it changes all the time. The trends change. But my hope is that the way we wear our hair and the way we feel about our hair is not a trend, and that people will feel free to wear their hair how they want.
I wanted to learn more about the history of black hair and cultural expression. So up next, we hear from an African-American history professor at St. Louis University who says her passion for black culture and history has allowed her to understand the fight behind passing the Crown Act and how it is only the beginning. We wanted to learn more about the culture of black hair and the history behind some of the protective styles we see today, like braids, locks, and twists. So we sat down with Katrina Thompson Moore, an associate professor in the Department of History and African American Studies at St. Louis University, about her personal journey with hair and the history behind some of her favorite hairstyles.
First memory I have of getting my hair done is a hot comb on a Saturday evening for church on Sunday morning. And a hot comb, and they're now they have hot combs you can plug in. So it is a metal comb that my mother had on a stove that it had fire. So she had the old fashioned hot comb. And you sit there as still as possible, but no matter what, you're going to get burned. And your mom will take your kinky, some people call it nappy, coily hair, and put this very hot comb against it. And you hear a sizzle with the grease in your hair kind of burning, and your hair is flattened. And now it's straight. And the one thing I remember is the tips of my ear always being burned. And my mother said, I move. And I promise you, I didn't move. And that's my first memory. And I'm going to say it is a little traumatic because it's literally the burning of your hair. It's the burning of your hair to make it straight. And so the one thing that I learned very early on is that your hair is supposed to be straight to go somewhere nice.
At a young age, she realized that straightened hair meant it was good, and getting a perm was the next level of straightness. For many Black women, a perm can be a very traumatic experience. So after having a bad perm and losing a lot of her hair, Katrina started to think differently.
What actually changed was when I was in high school, and the Fugees came out, and Lauryn Hill. And she is the reason I went natural in 1997. I went natural my senior year of high school, and I was like the only one. And I didn't know what really going natural was. All I knew was I was going to stop getting a perm because I didn't see the complexity of hairstyles because we didn't have, you know, this, and this just ages me because I'm like, we didn't have internet. We had internet, but people weren't posting natural hairstyles and how to's. And so I was like, I'm not getting a perm anymore. And Lauryn Hill is gorgeous and she's cool. And she's like, this is what you do. And I was into really East Coast rap, and I saw more people that had natural hair, but Lauryn Hill really solidified. I was like, I'm going for it.
Lauryn Hill, Erykah Badu, Jill Scott, NDIRE, and more have embraced natural hair, not only in their personal lives, but in their music as well. And one of the ways Black women protect their natural hair is to get braids. So we asked Katrina about the history of braids in the African diaspora.
I mean, the history of braids goes back to the beginning of time with Black people. I mean, ancient, BC, essentially, you know, the before Christ time, where you have, and if anyone ever, when you go to these displays of African art, of Egyptian art, you know, in Missouri at the Missouri History Museum, there was an Egyptian display fairly recently. It may still be there. Look at the hair of the statues, of the sculptures, they are in sort of Bantu knots, they're in locks, they're in braids. And some of them, even during that time, you even have wigs during that time of braids. So that's why it's not really new that you have this. So this is something, cornrows symbolize status. And they would ornate their hair. And this went back before the, you know, quote unquote, discovery of America, before we understand, so with its early history, ancient world, Black people have been using their hair as a way to express themselves. And hair, and so my mother was right, and I know it's biblical, your hair is your glory. And coming out of the continent of Africa, that's how they expressed it there. And even if that meant shaving their head, because even when they shaved their head, they may sort of put different paint on it. And so that was a part of their expression of their culture and their beauty and their status and their ethnicity and their wealth.
Even though braids were expressive and artistic, some women used braids as a messaging system to communicate and create maps as guides to freedom during slavery. Today, many Black women carry on the tradition of wearing braids to express themselves. There is an emotional connection Black women have with their hair, and Katrina says the anxiety that comes with figuring out what to do with your hair comes from decades of having to conform to Eurocentric beauty standards.
Throughout the pandemic, people risked their lives to get perms, to get their hair done, because they didn't think they could actually go without it. They had to get their hair done. People risk COVID to make sure their hair was done. And I do believe in supporting your hairdressers because that's a profession. I know they suffered during COVID, but I saw posts of friends who's like, I have to get my hair done. My hair's getting too kinky, you know? And so it is an emotional state, hair. Oh my gosh. You can have the beautiful face in the world, but if you can't stand your hair, you just hate yourself. When Black women take out their braids, we have that moment of just utter pain of what am I going to do with my hair? Because I don't have a hair appointment today. You know, and so we have some of the most beautiful, diverse hair culturally throughout the world that people are trying to imitate us, you know, getting braids and going cornrows. But then we ourselves have to learn how to love our own hair once we reach hopefully a certain maturity and start thinking about it. And some of us never get there.
Katrina describes a Black woman learning to love her hair as a feat. And one of her biggest challenges was overcoming the loss of her hair after giving birth to her second child.
My hair fell out. It started falling out in chunks. Lost my edges. And those of you who are Black women know, lose your edges. And that's pretty much the game's over. Because braids don't look right. Nothing looks right. You can't cover edges except for the wig. So you're just in a bad place. And I cried every day. So it wasn't because my hair is natural. Now I have to deal with the fact that I got used to these particular styles that I thought were appropriate and I could deal with because hair is a part of beauty and a part of, some for some womanhood, for some people it's religious.
So she decided to shave it all off. And that choice gave her a new meaning to her own life.
It was the most therapeutic thing I could have done. It made me redefine womanhood, redefine beauty. And now I'm growing it out, but I've kept my edges shaved just to remind myself that NDIRE was right. I am not my hair, but I am also my hair, right? I am not my hair, meaning you're defining me in one thing, but I am my hair because I am the history of the locks. I'm the history of the cornrows. I'm the history of the kinky, of the coily. I'm the history of the bantu knots. I'm the history of the braids. I'm the history of the afro, all those hairstyles. No other culture has history like our hair history. No other culture. That is ours. So I am my hair because I am my history. But I am not my hair and how you define it. And my beauty could be with I'm bald, if I have a weave to my toes, it's still there. And that as a woman is hard to accept. But as Black women, I think that we are the only culture that has to, I think almost all of us have to deal with it. To a point, you know, I mean, and even people who we think have beautiful hair, have hair issues because of the way the world has taught us about being Black women.
The Crown Act has not passed in the state of Missouri, but it is law in its two major cities, St. Louis and Kansas City. The law has only passed in 14 states out of the 50.
And so the fact that you would vote against, and you know, these are always complicated. There's always pork added to these legislations. However, there's nothing that will hurt you about voting to say, hey, people shouldn't get discriminated against about their hair. And so I think that it would be a lot more active if people recognize that the reason it's not passed is that it has to do with just basic racism, right? It's just basic racism because, and maybe a lack of knowledge on this idea of it, because you have majority white elected officials, majority white male elected officials, that you say braids to them and they have no idea what you're talking about. And so it's a cultural lack of understanding of maybe even the terms of how well do they even understand what these various hairstyles mean, and how well do they understand this is simply a discrimination. The one thing that African Americans have learned is that we have to make it legal. We can't just make you feel bad about treating Black people badly, right? That does not work. It doesn't. The morality plea, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King did the morality plea at the same time of fighting in the courts. NAACP, LDF, Legal Defense and Education Fund, they're fighting in the courts. we realize that we just can't say, please stop shooting us in the street. We need to change legislation. Please stop sending us home because our hair has braids. We need to make legislation because just making you feel bad or educating you does not work. And so that is what's necessary. It's kind of sad, right? But that's it, because the moral argument does never work in the U.S. Wars have been fought when you could have just had a moral high ground. So that's why the Crown Act is important, because that's how it works here. That's how we make change. I'm looking forward to my daughters, who are going to deal with so many things in life, that not being one of them. That they just pick their fro out and put on their suit and go to run the world. If my daughter can have, and not only just like a kinky fro, like a fro, you know, like a, and go and have the Afro fist hair, you know, comb it out and go to work, and she doesn't think about it. That's when you know you've made it. When she doesn't think about it, like, what? You think something wrong with my hair? Like, you're weird. I want, you know, that's when we have made it. When my daughters, who are going to run, you know, White House, whatever they choose, corporate, university, when they don't think about it, and when they walk in a room and they're actually judged by what they say, you know, that is when things are going to happen. And that's not going to happen right now, but we're moving towards it.
This show is produced by me, Lauren Brown, executive producer Jay Harrell, director of on-demand content and community partnerships. Special thanks to Leslie Frizzy Hughes for allowing us to cover Frizz Fest 2021. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.